My name's Adele Onyango, and welcome to another episode of Legally Clueless. No, seriously, I have no clue what I'm doing, but I'm pretty sure I'm not the only one. Hey you, welcome to this episode of Legally Clueless. This is what's coming up.
A group of boys went, planned that I was trying to, you know, seduce them or something. It was just like a story there. I was trying to seduce one of their friends. The friends went and told his friends. His friends were not happy with the story. So they came for me and they beat me so bad. And now the other form falls, because it was during that time of KCSE. If you remember very well, the KCSE period, people, the form 1, form 2, form 3, they go home. They leave the form 4s in school. So when we were left there, all the form 4s now had the story of what's happening. I was in like a cube being beaten by like 10 boys plus. Within 21 hour, the whole school is there witnessing my humiliation. And that really took me in a very, very dark space mentally, because I was sitting for my final exams after 4 years. Then I had to do the KCSE physics exam paper 3. It was the last exam, with bruises on my face and cuts on my body, because it was that bad. It took only one guy to save me. Otherwise, it could have been a different story.
That is part one of Johnny the Hairdresser's story. That's coming up a little later in this episode. So hang tight for that. But before we get there, welcome, welcome, welcome to the fam. If you're an OG member, thank you for rocking with us. And if you're new here, this particular show goes out every single Monday. And then on Wednesdays, we have the Midweek Tease, where I unpack different topics that can help you, an African woman, on your healing journey. Our newsletter also goes out on Wednesdays, so make sure you sign up for that on our website. The link is in the show notes. And on Thursdays, we have For Manaless Women, an incredible show that is just contributing to the awakening African women are going through. Currently, we have a very special season ongoing where we are outside of Kenya. And so we started off in Ghana, then we went to South Africa, then we went to Nigeria. This week, I can't give it away. Just know we're going to a different African country. That's all I can tell you. Very excited about that season and very thankful to each and every one of you who is gobbling up For Manaless Women. It's our youngest show, but it has grown faster than any other show that we have rolled out here. And we've rolled out quite a few shows. So thank you for rocking with us. And make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening to this on, so that you do not miss out on any of the good stuff that we have. Before we jump into the story, though, I just need to give you a quick reminder that our next wellness talk is here, and it's happening on the 25th of July. And let me tell you, this is a topic that's very dear to my heart, because I experienced it. I am divorced, and it feels so good to be able to say it out loud, because at the time that I was going through it, which was a couple of years ago, man, the shame. I was just like whispering about it. There's just so much shame I felt. But my divorce is the biggest blessing that I got. It made me meet myself in ways that have freed me to be who I truly am. And I really want that for you who's going through, be it a divorce or the end of a long-term relationship. I really want you to find yourself again. And so that's exactly what our next wellness talk is called. It's called Divorce Care When the Marriage Ends: Finding Yourself Again. And we're going to be joined by accredited psychologist Faith Guchu, who's my personal psychologist, who walked me through my divorce period. Like, I don't know what I would have done without Faith, right? And yeah, it's just for the talk, an acknowledgement that divorce isn't just the end of a marriage. There's so many things you lose: your routines, your identity, friendships, family dynamics, dreams, the future you imagine for yourself. The list of losses is long. But let me tell you, once you navigate grieving all of those losses, you free yourself. You find yourself again. And that's what we're going to be talking about: navigating that grief, rebuilding your sense of self, creating a new support system, co-parenting, for those of you who have kids, healing before your next chapter, and so much more. If this season of your life or someone you love's life looks anything like that, maybe they're also navigating a divorce, we would love to be able to hold space for you. And so 25th of July, it's 10 a.m. East Africa time. It's virtual. Wherever you are in the world, you can tune in. Our wellness talks have the provision for you to send in questions anonymously to Faith. Please use her. She's such a resource. So much of who I am today is because of the work I did with her. And tickets are only 1,000 bob. And if you check out the show notes, there is all of the links that you need for the good stuff on the tickets. And make sure you share about our wellness talk with a sister who you know would benefit from coming for it. I can't wait to see you guys then. All right. Johnny, let's get into Johnny the hairdresser's story. Man, it's just a story that reminds me how we often celebrate a lot of people's success, especially like public figures, because Johnny the hairdresser is quite a known figure in our region. For those of you outside the region, he's very well known, and he details it in his story. So I don't want to give away too much of that. But we often see these people and we celebrate their success, but we don't really know what it costs to get them there, right? And so now we dive into that. So here's part one of Johnny's story.
100 African stories on Legally Clueless. Stories from Africa.
My name is Johnny, John Mukuna Mongai. I was born and raised in Naivasha at a small estate called Lakeview Estate. I've grown up there for the entire time of my life, for the better part of my life. Yeah, and I moved back to Nairobi after 18. My mom told us, 18 nimefika, get out. So every time all our siblings, 18 years, get out, go to your uncle, go to your aunt, go somewhere, but not in my house. But it was a way of us sending us to the world and exposing us to growth. Life was good. My parents were comfortable to raise us, and I grew up technically knowing that my parents can provide, honestly, but my sisters, my brother and sister didn't grow up in such an environment. By the time I was born, at least things were easy for the family, but it was not bad, honestly. I lived like a normal child, honestly. I interacted more with my brother because we have a 2-year age gap. So me and my brother, we grew up like literally twins, but he has a different personality than I have. He has a different character. Everything is different with him. And my sister, we have a very big age gap. We now came to bond now that we are adults. It was not bad. I feel like they embraced my femininity from a very young age, and they knew my kind of personality and character from a very young age. So it was easier, quote unquote, for me to even like be free with myself and be open to my character. Yes, I was very, very girly in terms of my lifestyle. My personality was very feminine. So I used to play with the girls when I was younger. I didn't like the boys, hanging out with the boys, especially my brother, because I was like, I'm not into this football. I'm not into this Bano. You remember Bano? The one that you play with the pebbles. I was not into that. So I was most into the Kupikanisha, Kalongolongo. Kalongolongo is that you are the mother, you act as the mother, and the other acts as the father. I was neither the mother or the father. I was always the auntie. So I felt like they knew who I was from the word go. So I felt like they nurtured my character from a very young age, and I ran away with that. The environment around me was not as toxic. I think they knew the character that I portray, the personality that I have. They knew what I like and what I don't like. And also, I was very soft when I was very young. I was soft, kind. I was such an introvert. I didn't even go outside to play with other people. I used to spend most of the time alone. So with that also, they were like, this one is like a special kind of kid. I don't know. But they were kind to me. My neighbors, my mom's friends, they were kind to me because my face also was very feminine. I was so feminine in all in every aspect of my life. My hands, my voice, my skin. I didn't have acne growing up. I didn't even break my voice in high school. Like, I was so like a girl in high school, in school. So they knew how to treat me. They knew how to treat me like an egg. The treatment I got in school, let's start from my primary. I feel like people were more open. They were more exposed at that time to even like see people like me. They used to call her the sissy boys back then. Yeah. Yeah. So they at least they had seen other people from their previous classes. So it was very easy even for me to transition from this school to this other school. Again, the thing that also saved me, I was very smart in school. I used to score the A's and I was the top 5 student. So with that came like a bonus. They were like, okay, he's girly, but at the same time, he's so smart and he's disciplined. I was very disciplined. I was so organized. I was so clean. So people used to admire the kind of lifestyle at that time that I was living. And I was very young. I didn't know any better. So I just did what I thought was best for me. So in primary, of course, I was smart. Then I was a prefect, so that came with some kind of power. You know the powers the prefects used to be given in school? So the people used not to respect me because they were like, oh, he's girly, but at the same time, he's a prefect. He's also very smart, so a win is a win. So I carried that through my primary now, class 8, 7. I did so well in primary. I passed very well. Also in primary, the boys were, of course, they were wondering, what's this character? What's this personality that you have? But the fact that I was smarter than them, it was a bother. I was like, can you focus on your study rather than focusing on me? Yeah, so I feel like being smart and being like, I don't know how to say it, but better than the rest really helped. But going to high school, now things changed. Yeah, so going to high school, form one, I get the form fours. They're like, we don't accept such kind of people in this school, because I went to a police school, which was very, very strict. Yeah, and the discipline was like 10 times more than primary. The strategy, everything was different. The system was different. In primary, we were not being like punished physically, but here now they were using the Bunsen burner, the pipes, the sticks to beat us. So it was kind of new to me because I'm like, I'm not used to physical, you know, torture. Because that was torture, by the way. In high school, it was torture. And also, I felt like my high school was very toxic. It was like a toxic environment for me. In form one, of course, the bullying, because I'm so soft. The boys, they are very rough, rowdy, and out there. So it took me time before I adjusted to the new school. And I remember form one, form two, I didn't perform very well, because that thing affected me so much. It affected my performance, it affected my everything. Mm-hmm. So in form one, form two, I was now trying to transition to the new life. It's okay. And I was like, now I have to focus now on my studies. But it was now like too late, because when you don't get form one, form two, the basics, even form three, form four, you don't have the foundation to even pass your exams. Yeah. So I felt like if I focused form one, form two, I could have passed my end of year exams, both in form three and form four. But bullying was there as well. I was bullied by my classmates, by my stream mates. I was also bullied by form fours who I found there. And it was not that bully or physical, like they are beating you. It was that emotional torture. It was that manipulation. It was that gaslighting. They were gaslighting me to think that I am not perfect. I am not belonging to the space. They made me really, really question my sexuality, my personality. It made me question my entire existence in this world. So high school was rough, but I always say it was a blessing in disguise, because it taught me how to be very, very tough. It taught me how to say no. It taught me how to have boundaries, healthy boundaries as well. It made me stand up for myself. So high school was not the best moments in my life, because there was one time I was involved in a mob. Yeah, yes. I was involved, a group of boys went, planned that I was trying to, you know, seduce them or something. It was just like a story there. I was trying to seduce one of their friends. The friends went and told his friends. His friends were not happy with the story. So they came for me and they beat me so bad. And now the other form force, because it was during that time of KCSE. If you remember very well, the KCSE period, people, the form one, form two, form three, they go home. They leave the form fours in school. So when we were left there, all the form fours now had the story of what's happening. I was in like a cube being beaten by like 10 boys plus. Within 30 minutes, 30, within 21 hour, the whole school is there witnessing my humiliation. And that really took me in a very, very dark space mentally, because I was sitting for my final exams after 4 years. Then I had to do the KCSE physics exam paper 3, it was the last exam, with bruises on my face and cuts on my body, because it was that bad. It took only one guy to save me, otherwise it could have been a different story. So it took me so much of my mental health to even heal from that and forgive the people who did that to me at the time. So when I remember high school, it doesn't bring very great memories. However, I enjoyed myself in my power, in anything that I could do. I went to functions, I joined clubs. I just lived the life, but I was working on eggshells at the time. Yeah. I didn't report because it was a homosexual case. And homosexuality in school was a no-no. It was abomination. It was prohibited. If you had, like, if people heard that you were involved in such things, you are being punished, even with the teachers themselves. You're even given suspension and expulsion. It was so extreme, you couldn't even talk to someone about it. So I just had to, like, because the teachers saw me, they were like, yesterday you were not injured, today you have bruises on your face, what happened? And I told them, no, I just fell from the top bed down, I hit the box, the metal box, it cut me. And they were like, no, these are punches on your face, we can tell. You didn't just fall, you were beaten severely by people. Tell us. I was like, I fell. So immediately I was denying, I was being punished as well. So on top of the pain that I had, my class teacher also added some punishment on me. I was caned, guy, so badly. So I have this pain, until I became numb. I couldn't feel the pain anymore. So the teacher was like, who beat you last night? I'm like, no one, another round. Who did this to you? No one, another round. Johnny, tell us the truth. I'm like, I'm telling you the truth. But since it was the last few days of us leaving the school, they were like, you did not tell us. You don't want us to give you the help that you want. You don't want to get justice for the people who did this to you. So you'll just have to take the L and suffer in silence since you don't want to tell us. The same case, I went home after now like 3 days. I told my mom the same thing. I fell from the bed and got myself injured. And she was like, no, you are lying. And I know you are lying. But if you don't want to talk about it right now, it's fine. So that whole saga and story, the people who did that to me, they were not punished. They were not even put into test or anything by the teachers or nothing. So I just left that story, that stone unturned. I didn't even sleep in my bed. I slept in the dining hall on the bench at the far end. Because I am not sure if I'm safe. Because I was rescued by one person. And he was a rugby guy. He was like, you'll kill him. Mtaua Johnny, you'll kill him. Leave him. They were like, yeah, yes, yes. I was like, no. I was even like unconscious at that point. So when he took me out from that whole commotion, I ran to the field. Because our school was so big. So I ran to the farthest end at the field and I started crying because the pain was too much. I couldn't even feel pain anymore. So I didn't even have supper. I didn't even go to read for my final exam. I just went to the dining hall, took my blazer and slept there the entire night till the next morning. Yeah, it was so, I was so scared because I was afraid the security would have found me. another punishment. So I literally did not sleep because now the pain were now manifesting. Now that I'm not doing anything else, it was bad. I think I was protected. What held me actually was I felt like I wanted to protect her peace, her mind. I didn't want her to worry about me because at that point, I had already forgiven my oppressors. I had already forgiven the people who humiliated me. I just told God, I can't do anything to them. I can't revenge. I can't beat them back. The only way is just forgiving them, forgive myself, and move on with life. And the best revenge was me becoming better. So I didn't want that to be, I didn't want to take myself back into that space, especially. I did it for myself as well. I didn't want to now start unpacking those, oh, what happened? Why did they do that? What led them to do that? There's a reason why they do that. You know, when you tell parents such things, they'll be like, but this is not a one-day decision. This is something that has been recurring. Or you just don't tell us. Or this is something that has been there. It's just that it erupted to physical assault. And I was like, no, I don't want to get myself back into that space. I was like already in good terms with my mom at that time. So I didn't want to ruin that with her as well. So I just felt like I don't want to put her in that position where she has to worry about my well-being every time that I'm going outside. Because now it was not after Form 4. Then we go to campus. So I didn't want to put her into that space where she'll have to worry about me going to campus. And campus is not any better than high school. It's still the same. Yeah. So I didn't want just to do that to her. After high school now, I was enrolled. I failed in high school, by the way. I failed terribly because of all those shenanigans that were happening in high school. I failed. I think I got a C. Yet I was the tegemeo, I was the breadwinner, quote unquote. Because my sister got, a C+. My brother got a C+. And I was the bright student. I was the brightest in the family. No cow, but it's true. So when I saw my sister's performance and my brother's performance, I was like, I will surpass this C+. I'll either get an A-, B+. If worst comes to us, I'll get a B-. Even that B- I didn't get. Even that C+, I got a C. And they were all shocked. So my mom was like, I know why you got a C, but we shall revisit that. So I think she knew. She even called my class teacher. So after high school, it's either you are called to campus or you go to a parallel program or you go to college. The ones that you're going to pay for yourself. But when you go to the main campus, it will be catered for by the government or something. It is going to be cheaper. So the pass mark to get to campus was C+ and above. Of course, I did not get to that point. So I had to look for a school to do a course. So my mom, we had to come up with a solution. I need to go to school. It's after campus. It's either I go to school or I go to school campus. So I went to Strathmore. I was enrolled to do international relations, went for the interview, did the interview, passed the interview. Strathmore, they wear official clothes, so you can't go with casual. So I had to buy official clothes, khaki trousers, loafers, Chinese collar shirts, literally like a corporate person. And we bought the clothes with my sister. My sister was so supportive at that time. She bought me the clothes. She bought me everything that I needed, the books. And 1 week to admission, I was like, no, I'm not going to Strathmore. Yeah, I was like, get somebody else to do it. I'm not doing it. And my sister was like, why? You waited for us to do all these things just for you to say you're not going to Strathmore. What's the problem? I don't know. I just don't feel that's my calling. I don't feel like that's the course I'm called to pursue, honestly. And she was like, but this is too late. You already made the fees, payments, everything. You can't just back down from this opportunity. I was like, no. And my cousin was the one who was helping us get into Strathmore because I failed. So we literally begged him, oh, please go root for us, talk to us, nini. And I still said, no, I don't feel like going to Strathmore. I won't take that course, honestly. So she told my mom. My mom was like, "Aye, no, stop doing that. You are overreacting. You're being dramatic. Stop being complicated." I was like, "But I'm being honest. I don't want to go waste your money. Then you say at least you could have done something else, something that you like." I didn't want to get to that point. So I just told them, since I just finished high school, like, it was like 5 months before. So there was that 1 year grace period for the Form 4 leavers to stay home, do the computer packages, do driving, those small courses. So my mom was like, since other people have not yet joined campus, he can also take a small course of his choice. Then after the course, he goes back to campus. And I was like, cool, now we are talking. At that point, my dad died at when I was in class 7, that is 2010. Yeah, he passed away 2010, and he didn't see us grow, especially our teenagehood and our adulthood. He only saw us when we were like small children. So my dad wasn't present, yeah, during that time. So it was my mom, my sister, my brother, and I was trying to, you know, save them as well, because at the time when my dad died, things were a bit difficult for us. In terms of finances, even the property, like a lot was going on. You know, when death comes, the in-laws, they want some bit of this and that. So it was a lot of happening. But my mom was able to, you know, figure out her way up and provide for us, me and my siblings. So I told my mom, that can work. I can go to a short course, do something small, then go back to Strathmore. She was like, fine. What do you want to do? All I want to do hairdressing. She was like, you don't want to do something to do with computer packages. I told her, but I did that in high school. At least I have ideas, one or two, of computer packages. She was like, what about driving? I was like, I don't like driving. I don't want to be driving. I want to do hairdressing. So she was like, do you know a school where you can get those services? I was like, let me do my research, then I'll let you know. I think what made me want to pursue hairdressing was it was the easiest course I could pursue at the time. I was literally escaping from now the hard courses, honestly. And also I was like, I have an idea or two about hairdressing, because I used to go to my aunt's salon. She had a salon in Naivasha. I used to go help her and do the clients, wash clients, do their braids, do blow dry. Like I had an idea of what I was doing, because I was so scared to fail again, because I failed in high school and I was performing well in primary. So the high school, I didn't want to waste my mom's money again, because in high school, honestly, I wasted her money. And I felt so bad. And I was like, I can't go to high school, to campus, do something I'm not aware of. I'd rather just go do something I know and make the most out of it. That was my thinking at that time. Because I was like, Strathmore really was expensive. I think per semester was 200,000. Yeah. Considering my mom has other kids who are also in campus. My sister at the time, she was, I think, married or in the process of getting married. My brother was also in campus. And also him, his school fees was a lot. So in my head, I was like, I can't do this to my mom again. Let me just take a course that doesn't require much of technicality, something that I am familiar with, and I'll make something out of it. So that was my entire thought process when it came to deciding. It was not like I really, really wanted to do hairdressing. I was just like, that's the only thing that I know. If I knew something to do with IT or those things, tech things, I could have done IT. Yeah, if I knew something to do with accounting and business, I could have done business management. But I went there with what I know. And I made the lemonades out of those lemons at the time. Yeah, my sister was very supportive in that that process of, you know, school hunting. She was very, very supportive. And she went online, websites, looking for those schools that have 5-star ratings. Because at the time, Instagram, TikTok, and social media was not very, it was not as pronounced as it is right now, where you can find everything on Instagram. Right now, when you get on Instagram, you search for Kenyan makeup school, you'll get options. If you go on TikTok, you search for Kivitenge outfits, you'll get like a bunch of pages. So at that time, you used to go on websites online, search for hair schools. So at that time was Vera Beauty School. Ashley's was also an option. Linton's was also an option. Which other school was there? I can't remember the other schools, but they were there. So I decided to do Ashley's because the Ashley's package made sense financially and course-wise. I chose hairdressing only because there was that option of choosing hairdressing, beauty, or fashion. So I was like, let me just do hair. Because I was like, the hair is the only thing that I know. Remember, I was very afraid of taking a new course, then I fail. So I think I had that trauma of failing, and I didn't want to fail again. So I just took hairdressing. My mom was like, you don't want to take makeup? I was like, no, I don't know anything about makeup. I only know hair. At least I can blow dry, I can plait, and if with the guidance of the trainers, I'll be better. So I went there with only one mission, to be perfect and to pass my exams and get some gigs here and there and not go back to Strathmore. My plan was not to go back to Strathmore all this time. So in every aspect of the game, I was like, I'm not going back to Strathmore. So I did everything in my power to stay in the industry of hairdressing. So my sister got the Ashley's, we inquired, they were very fast with the admission. And by February, I was joining the classes. I did the classes for 7 months. People think that hairdressing and beauty is easy. It is not. It's actually the hardest course you could give someone who doesn't know anything about beauty. In our class, we were 22 students, 11 boys, and the rest were girls. The third month, we were like 7 boys, 20 girls. So the number kept on reducing as the month went, as the courses were being pursued and everything was happening. The numbers was reducing. So by the time the 7th month is reaching, we were like 2 boys, 11 girls. Yeah, in our class. So by the time month 7 is clicking, I was the only boy in our class doing the hairdressing course. All the other boys had dropped out. All they were given up with the courses because it was so intense in school. We had 375 clients to attend to by the time that 7 months is over. We had targets to pay, and each target you're supposed to pay 50 shillings. So 375 times 50, exactly. So that means you have to go outside and get clients who are paying to cater for those targets that you're supposed to pay. So you used to go to Gikomba, pay the driver 200 shillings, jaza, or fill the matatu. Matatu now is the public transport it was the cheapest way of, you know, taking the people to school. And those people that you are carrying, the 14 people in that public transport, we used to pay for their services. So they used to do those services for free. So the next weekend we go, another bunch. And these are people we are finding in the streets. You find a lady there with her 2 kids on the streets up on Luthuli. You tell her, Sister Nancy, come, let's go. I do your hair and your kids' hair for free. Another one. So we had to build like a community of people. We'll be going for every month with my friend. So I teamed up with a friend. She was also in alignment with my goals. So it was easy for us to work together. And we were the only 2 students who graduated with top honors in college. Yeah, so it was really tough, and I am glad that I had someone at the time to, you know, hold accountable for. I was like, I can't do this by myself. I need someone. We can push each other. Then she was, for her now, the advantage for her was she was raised there, Gikomba, Muthurwa, those areas. So she had a lot of connection. Me, I just came from Naivasha. The only place I know is archives. If I don't see archives in town, I'm lost. So she really, really held my hand. She showed me Gikomba, the inside uko, that the interior of Muthurwa. I saw it all. They were now the environment there was different as well, because they are not used to seeing someone like me who is very girly. But God worked in his mysterious way, and they somehow accepted me. And they were like, bring Johnny every time you come. Carol, bring Johnny every time you come. Johnny, where is Johnny? No, this is in Kiswahili. Johnny, ako wapi mtu wetu? Where is Johnny, our guy? So I felt like it was favor from God as well, because I was like, I can't fail. I can't fail on this. That was the one thing I was like, I can't fail. My mom is putting a lot of money into this college. Hairdressing, yani, I can't fail. So fast forward, we graduated. We went back home, and now at that point, it's either I go back to Strathmore now, or I get a job. Two options. I get a job, or I go back to Strathmore. And whichever came first, I will go. So I was, this was like month one after completion of the course. So my mom was like, you know, now you have to go back to Strathmore. So just start getting ready, prepare yourself, you're going back to Strathmore. I was like, I'm not going back to Strathmore. So I told my friend, the one that you graduated with, I called her, hey, babe, where are you? She was like, I'm also looking for work. Can we go to Westlands, Kilimani, as we scout for jobs? I was like, yeah, let's go. Me, I don't want to go back to Strathmore, babe. Let's go job hunting, literally. So we used to alight from Archives, then walk from Archives to Westlands. Then from Westlands, we walk to Kilimani. Then from Kilimani, we go to Kileleshwa. And we are going to salons, door to door. We knock, hey, we are students from Ashley's. Kwanza, when they hear students from Ashley's, Omo, get out, just go. Hi, we are students from... get out. We don't want interns. We don't want newbies in the industry. So we literally were denied the opportunities. Even some of the big salons that I came to work with later, I told them, I remember there was a time I came and you pushed me away. And they were like, no, you don't understand the industry. That's how it is. I was like, it's fine. So we tarmacked for like 2 months looking for work. I was even to a point of, I would be a shampoo boy. I don't want to go to Strathmore. And when my mom knows that I am working, she'd be like, just work, then we see how things go. So I got that, finally we got a gig at Buru. Buru is on your way to Jogo Road, Eastlands. And there the salon was not high-end, so the payment was so, so little. That guy used to give us only 200 shillings per day. That was my salary. So it was my no responsibility to do the math. 200 times 6, that's 1,200. That's my salary for a week. Now then times 4, that's 4,800. So imagine I'm surviving on a budget of 4,800 Kenyan shillings. Yes. And at that time, I had moved out from my sister, because my sister now was officially married. She was expectant, so I couldn't stay there. I needed to give her space. So I moved in with my brother. And I told you, my brother was 2 years older than me. So even him is also trying to figure out in life. So we just took like a small house in Eastlands. We used to pay like, was it 10,000? Yeah. And we used to split that amount. 50-50. My brother pays 50%. I cater for the rest 50% with a 4,800 salary. Yes. So I told my mom, I got a job. She was like, oh, that's nice. Where did you get? I was like, in Buru. She was like, how is security in Buru? I'm like, it's fine. At least I have Caro with me. So she was like, at least you have a friend. So just push. But remember, you still have to go to Strathmore. I was like, it's okay. I'll go. But let's see how this goes. We didn't even finish like 3 months, and my friend crashed out on the employer. Yes, because that guy, wherever he is, where you, that guy used to make sure we were at work by 6 in the morning. So we get there at 6, wash all the towels, wash the entire salon, wash the combs, everything, wipe the products, everything was done by us. Then at the end of the day, they pay us 200 shillings. So technically, we were just like cleaners in his salon. Considering we are people who have come from the best performing students in school, we were the if you wanted a creative hairstyle, the teacher could send you to Joni or my friend Caro. So it was like a blow on us because we are like, we are the best students in school, yet you've come here just to clean for you. I felt it was like a bit of a downgrade for us, but we were just there for the experience. So my friend wasn't able to, you know, stay there anymore. She couldn't take it anymore. Also, the environment was a bit hostile. Gossip, you know, they are not professional salon. It's not like a professional setup. So they have that, for lack of a better word, umamanjeri kind of vibe. So the gossip is constant. The madharao in English is what? The bad treatment, the ill treatment was also extreme. They were literally looking down on us. And now, especially for me, because they are like, hey, this one is so girly. So they were even discussing me with clients. So even clients couldn't trust me with their hair. So one morning, we went with my friend Carol to do the cleaning as usual. We were cleaning the towels. The boss came, started causing tantrums, and Carol just poured the water in the salon and she left. Yeah, she left. She was like, I don't need this job anymore. I'd rather stay home than be mistreated here. She left. She was like, give me my 200 shillings. She was given the 200 shillings. They both asked me, Joni, are you also leaving? I was like, hey, I don't have a plan B. I'm staying. I don't have a plan B or C or D. Because if I get out of this place, I'm going back to Strathmore. So I just told my friend was like, Joni, I'm not leaving you. Let's go. So I was torn in between. Should I stay and protect my not going to Strathmore or leave and go back to Strathmore and now do the course that I didn't want to do? So at that point is when I learned that you have to put yourself first. This is not a marriage thing that you have to move things together. So I just told my friend, babe, I love you. I hear you. They are not the best people to work with, but me, I'm not going. She was like, you want to stay here in this mistreatment that they are doing to you? Joni, let's go. I can't leave you. I'm like, no, babe, I can't leave. I don't have any other place to go. Because you know how she came from around? Because Buru, Gikomba, it's around the same environment. So she had connections with her friends. She had people she can go to. Mimi, the only place I can go, the only salon I can go to is in Naivasha. And I don't want to go anywhere to inconvenience my mom's peace or anything. So I just told her, Aki, I will vomilia here. I will persevere this treatment. But soon, when I get another gig, I will go. So eventually I stayed there for another 6 months, 6 to 1 year. Yeah, still the same routine. He didn't trust me with his clients. So I used to call my friends just to come. For him to see, I am able to do this job. I am the perfect candidate. Like, I can be able to do braiding. I can be able to do barbering. I literally was doing everything. Weaving, everything. So one time he gave me his client. No, his client came. He wasn't around. And the client was like, I can't wait for him. Can't you do me this service? And at the time, the service was called palm rods. I don't know if you know palm rods. Palm rods are those... You put a mousse and they look like they are curls in short or more. And they are very technical as well. You have to have a certain technique to install them. And me, I used the knowledge that I had from Ashley's, did the palm rods, and they came out so nice, better than what he used to do. Because now it was giving precision, it was giving professionalism. Considering me, I came from Ashley's, these are Mta or a ghetto salon. So they were like, hey, where did you learn to do this from? This is so perfect. So the client shifted from him. And always the client used to come and say, I want Joni to do my hair. And he was a bit jealous about it. And one morning he told me, Johnny, I can't have you anymore here. Omo, get out. Just go. And I told him, oh, yeah, also me, I've been thinking. I don't want to stay here anymore. So all this time, my sister was with me. She was asking me, how is the new job? She even came. At some point, she came and she was like, Johnny, you can't stay here. We took you to Ashley's. You did a seventh month course just for you to come to this small salon. No. So she talked to one of her friends. She had a salon in the mall, Mombasa Road, and it was a bit better. Even the aesthetics were better. So she told me, this place, you'll go as an intern. You will not start earning immediately. And I was like, as long as I come from this salon, from Buruburu, imagine I'm okay. Even if I'll be doing pro bono work, I'm okay.
Catch more African stories in the next episode of Legally Clueless.
Ooh, what an incredible story. I know we ended on a cliffhanger, but next week, part two of Johnny's story is going to be out. So make sure you subscribe wherever you're listening to this on so you don't miss out on that. So many things, I think, stayed with me. But like the most important one is kindness. The importance of kindness, right? Kindness being the driver of how his family just accepted him as he was. The kindness of the rugby player who stepped in and stopped that vicious, terrible attack. The kindness of his sister refusing to let him give up. And yes, like those moments don't erase like the pain he had experienced, especially that attack that like completely broke my heart. But they really just become proof that like, you know, that doesn't, the cruelty doesn't have the last word. You know what I mean? I just, I think I've been thinking a lot about kindness because I'm a kind person. I'm a kind person and very many people have taken advantage of that. And I keep saying, in fact, I was sending my girlfriend a voice note yesterday and I was telling her, I never want to lose the kindness. I know I need to increase my discernment, but my kindness, no, because kindness is so revolutionary. And I love that we saw that come out in part one of Johnny's story. So next week, part two lands and his career begins to take off. He lands jobs in salons. He starts working with celebrities and, you know, making decisions that force him to choose between financial security and betting on himself. So what I want to hear from you, wherever it is that you are listening to this on, part one, what did you connect with? Let me know in the comment section, wherever you're listening to this on. I love, 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 love reading your comments. And if Johnny's story resonated with you and you want to share your story as well, you're African, you have a story, it is valid, we want to hear it. Fill out the storyteller form. A link is in the show notes and one of our correspondents is going to get back to you. Oh, this has been incredible. I love kicking off the week with you. And as always, I truly appreciate you. And I know that you have every single thing it takes to heal. That's it for this episode of Legally Clueless. You can share this podcast with your friends. You can keep it for yourself. I'm not judging. Just make sure you're here next week for the next episode.